This is an intro. Intro, intro, intro.
Hustle and Flowchart with your boy,
my boy,
Matt Wolf
and Joe Fit.
Hey!
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Hustle and Flowchart.
Why is that, Matt?
No, it's really called Hustle and Flowchart. I was just making a joke because we're talking to a real estate dude.
Well, it's better than Hustle and Flowchart, like you said last time we were recording. So you're out of the sharding phase and now into the housing phase.
Now we're
into
the
progress.
It's
progress. That's okay. Today's is all right. So yeah, this topic, our big topic in this show is, or in this show, in this specific episode is real estate. Mm-hmm. So, and particularly if you want to feel, or if you feel like you don't have assets or wealth growth in your life, in your business, and whatever you're doing, this is a good one to listen to. And this one's a little different too, because Corey actually really tells in detail his story from start mm-hmm. to where he's at now.
Yeah.
And it's a great, it's just cool, like, to just sit back and almost listen to his little nuggets and like little growth hacks along the way.
Yeah. Yeah. This is, it's definitely a deep dive into his journey to, you know, basically dropping out of school all mm-hmm. the way to, you know, building this real estate empire. And he just takes you through this journey. And along the journey, he, you know, he points out, like, here's the important lessons that I learned along the way of this journey. So you probably won't hear as much of us in this episode as you normally would, but that's because he was so into the story and he has so much passion towards his story that we had to, you know, we couldn't help but just sit back and just take it in and listen to his story. And once we get into it a little bit deeper, then he really starts to break down some of the real estate strategies. We asked him, if you were us and you had this kind of money set aside and, you know, you're our listener, what sort of recommendations would you make to get into real estate? And he gives very, very specific tactics that you should go and do to get yourself going in the real estate world.
Yeah, man. Like, literally no money down. Like I was just saying to Matt, like, it felt almost like Roland Frazier, like his previous episode with us, Roland's, that he gave a lot of options on how to do deals. Mm-hmm. So deal making, and then also how to buy a business without, and in this case, a big multifamily complex or, you know, big building for no money down.
Mm-hmm.
And leveraging banks and also investors in very creative ways. He breaks it all down.
You can almost hear Joe's mind explode. There's like a moment in this episode where there's like a little pop. It's very faint, but that was Joe's brain exploding.
So you can feel free to post on social medias, hashtag Hustle and Flowchart, and, you know, Matt and I, and tell me where you heard that pop.
I know exactly where it was. I saw it happen. Your eyes like turned red a little bit. Like,
then they went.
Yeah, just a little.
But lower. So you have to listen really close.
Yes.
So just pay attention all the way throughout this whole podcast.
It may also sound like Joe just scratching his head, but.
Or. Oh, that was Matt. All right, so.
Now you went too far.
Okay. Just keep listening. All righty. Well, so this is a good. It's just amazing. And you also hear the last thing is. And this is what I brought up. I'm like, okay, so we have these skills of how to run traffic, you know,
mm-hmm.
and we do have our course. We teach it at Evergreen Traffic. It might as well be called that. EvergreenProfits.com/traffic.
Mm-hmm.
That shows you exactly how we run traffic and build audiences. And I basically said to Corey, I'm like, well, this is a one way to do a basically a deal is like lead gen using mm-hmm. this traffic system. Because Corey knows about it as well, and that can push into actually finding deals and doing some kind of crafty real estate deal making.
Yeah.
But it's leveraging like the traffic system that we already have a handle of. And so it's really cool. Check it out. If you feel like audience building is something and maybe this thing piques your interest, evergreenprofits.com/traffic.
Cool.
There's just many ways to use that kind of system.
It's yep. Nice.
All right.
Let's go chat with Corey Boatwright all about his journey and the real estate world.
Ooh.
That's my radio voice.
Corey, what's happening?
What's up? What's up?
You're on the show. We've been talking about this for a while, huh?
Yeah. We have been talking about this for a while. You're right. I'm excited, man. Thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome.
We haven't really touched in the world of real estate much on the show, have we? I'm trying to think if we've ever had an episode about real estate.
We've had glimmers of it, but never like a dedicated type thing. Well, you have an interesting story, which we know some of, you know, the bits and pieces here, but that'll probably show how it ties in really well with what we do digital marketing wise.
Mm-hmm.
So Corey.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And we know a ton of people too. So there's just like count. We're talking about Brad Costanzo. He's always listening.
Brad.
So just careful. Anything you say, he will hear.
I know. He will. He'll all of a sudden, you'll get a Facebook post. I heard that.
Yeah.
I'm listening.
He's just, we just have a live feed going into his house. He's monitoring us all the time.
Most likely.
Yeah. We love you, Brad, as far as you know.
In case you wonder what it's like to be business partners with Brad Costanzo, he's big brother.
He's got us bugged.
He's big brother.
So, good. I don't know. When did you show? I know, Corey, you were one of the EGP letter subscribers way back in the day.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. That was a fun time. Experiment on our part. Physical mail, sending some stuff out monthly. But it was cool.
Right.
It was a success. I don't even know how we got to know each other. Is that how you found us originally?
It was, yeah. It was. That was, I could always tell that you guys were always on the cutting edge. And you know what's interesting that stood out from you than others is that you were willing to give more than others. Mm. Like you would give these full strategies. You're very relatable. Copy was cool, but it wasn't so much the copy. It was just like the strategies and what you're willing to give and how it was just, so real. And I think that was, one of the reasons that I was attracted to you, because I thought, man, these guys, they're actually doing this business. They're willing to give away, whenever they make mistakes or whenever they have success. And so, just being real like that was something that I thought was super cool about you guys.
Cool, man. Yeah, I appreciate those words. Yeah, and that was the point. We're trying to give all the good stuff away, and now that kind of turned into the podcast. So it's, this is kind of like where all that stuff lives now.
Yeah, for sure. So let's get your story. I know we were just actually, before we hit record, we were probably talking for a good 15 minutes, kind of, working through how all of our contacts and your contacts all kind of intertwined and all this kind of stuff. So I'm curious, you're doing real estate and you're selling education and
software.
You're doing software stuff. Let's take us back all the way before that. What were you doing before you got into that, and what's sort of your evolution?
Sure, man. So I've always been had an entrepreneurial spirit and always liked to talk with people, barter with people. I remember when I was in grade school that I would sell 5 for $1 candy bars, right? You could go and get the candy bars and for $1 for all 5 of them, and then I'd sell them for $1 each. And I always thought that was just really cool angle. Yeah. I always was excited about finding different angles on things. Another example of that would be whenever baseball cards, of course, they've always been around for a long time. When I started getting involved with baseball cards, which today I still have over 100,000 baseball, football, basketball cards. It's absolutely crazy. Jordan's rookie card, Mickey Mantle's second year card, and like unopened boxes of 89 score and Upper Deck and all this stuff.
Are you planning on ever selling, parting with any of them? Or
I will. I'm gonna. The idea was to be able to give them to my son. Right. And so that's still something I'm, excited about. But
cool, man.
Yeah. So it was. I remember going in the store, and it was a 91 Donruss, like this is a brand of card if you're not in the baseball cards. And then like there was this thing called a Diamond King, right? So a Diamond King card, let's just say, was worth like $5 or $10 or $20. And you could actually feel the back of the card. You could feel the package and see and kind of if it was thicker than the other packages, or you kind of move it up in the package without opening it. And I did that like 50 stores in one day, which was crazy, right? Because that was just super exciting to be able to know a strategy and an angle and then go and capitalize on it.
Wow.
And it was always just something I did. I remember in school, I'd trade Stompers and G.I. Joe and, all this stuff, dating myself definitely right now. But, it was always fun. And it wasn't until I got into selling Kirby Home Cleaning Systems at around like 15 and a half, like one of my first actual, quote, jobs, that it really started to teach me these selling skills and how important they were. I didn't appreciate them at that time in my life, but I always, looking back now, I'm so grateful that was a part of the experience, because all entrepreneurs I know of, they have a massive amount of resistance that they have to push through in order to get to any kind of success. So in other words, you know, you have to go through 100 no's to get one, yes, right? I remember, gosh, trying to think about this now. I remember I had to put on a knock 100 doors in the Oklahoma hot, you know, blazing hot summer heat, and put on 3 demonstrations, which is, you know, vacuuming someone's like kitchen, or I mean their living room.
Yeah.
And then I'd actually sell a home cleaning system. You couldn't call it a vacuum because they'd have you eat baby food if you did. It was very competitive. It's crazy on the sales team how what they do. And then you would actually sell one for like $1,500. So imagine this, a 15, 16 year old kid selling these home cleaning systems door to door. And then I got to a place where I was now selling more units without having to knock so many doors. So I was mm-hmm. Knocking 100 doors, putting on 3 demos, selling one unit. I got to a place where I was selling more units and actually had many awards for selling 3 in a day. Now I'm just saying this to kind of give you an idea of these angles and stuff like this on entrepreneurial drive. Because one thing I've asked myself many times is, can you teach drive? And I actually don't know the answer to that question. What do you think, Guy? Do you think you can actually teach someone to have drive?
That's a good question, because I was just thinking, because I could see it from both sides. Part of me thinks yes, with the right training, but you do need that something inside of you that has like just passion for to push towards something.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, like teach drive. I mean, I feel like drive can be created through, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. like major moments, milestones in your life, or like huge goals that you're trying to strive for. You can like really kind of create that drive, but I don't know. It's an interesting question. I'm not sure as far as learning drive, but I feel like drive could be like instilled in somebody through those sort of mechanisms.
Right. If you can teach it or create it. So I didn't have a father, you know, growing up. So mm-hmm. one of the things for me that was, I've looked back now at age 42, I think about sometimes kind of where some of the drive came from. And for me, it was this constant of like pushing myself to kind of prove something to someone that wasn't there, right? And so the interesting thing on my end, just being real transparent, was like constantly like I went to counseling on this. And so, I mean, basically you are proving something to someone, you know, and that was where a lot of my drive was coming through, that I wanted to be, quote, successful, even though I didn't have a figure there that I was kind of my guiding, my North Star. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So I'm actually, yeah. I can relate to this because yeah. now you got me thinking back to when I was like maybe 8. And yeah. you know, my parents divorced in middle school, when I was in middle school. And my dad now is like, oh, wow. I don't talk to him a lot. So I'm feeling mm-hmm. what you're saying here. But I also remember at like 8, I would always tell my mom, because she was the breadwinner and always had a really good job. I was like, I'm going to make more money than you one day. Like early in my life. And wow. I do now. And I did, you know, years ago. And I was like, I don't know where that came from though. So that's that drive. Even though at that time I was a pretty shy guy. Didn't really know what to do, but I did have some kind of drive. So I don't know what that was. Yeah. I was like 8 years
that's
old.
That's interesting, man.
Don't yeah, know where it came from. But so that's why, I feel like you can, I don't know, maybe it's situational. Something's probably in us. You know, entrepreneurs probably have more of that drive thing in us deeper than most. I'm questioning.
And my dad was a pilot. And so he got up and he like, you know, early in the morning, like when my mom would always joke, say he'd get up at dark and he'd come home at dark. Mm. And, you know, for like just years and years, like my dad would just, you know, work him. And he was a crop duster. And then we had a bunch of these little airplanes, had a bunch of airplanes. Mm-hmm. All of the folks that would work with my father were they loved to work with him, because he would get down really low on the crops and spray low. And what my point is that he did the extra effort, right? Yeah. He went through that extra effort. He did the things, and just constantly was getting more clients and doing more and more and more. And so I often think about, wow, man, maybe some of that is that DNA, you know, mm-hmm. that DNA of just like, you know, pushing yourself and you know, so that you can get more accomplished and, yeah. and almost squeeze the very most out of each day. Totally. So basically I often ask about that, you know, can you teach drive? But I think that a part of it there is like trying to prove something. And for my case, obviously through, you know, being again, transparent here is, It was, I'm trying to prove something to my father that actually wasn't there, but also I had two older brothers. And if you have two older brothers, you know, one's 5 years older, 3 years older than me. And, you know, so you're the youngest, and one brother, you know, is pushing you so hard because he's the athlete. He all stayed in football, baseball, you know, great, great guy, just absolutely driven.
Yeah.
But, you know, wanting me to be, you know, an all state in football, wanting me to all state in base, wanting me to do that. And basically I had a massive, you know, rejection to him. Because we fought a lot growing up, and you know, and so he would constantly be like, you know, you're just not going to do anything, you know, he wouldn't say great things. And so I remember also thinking about this drive part was like, I'll show you what I can do, right? Like, I'll prove you wrong. Yeah, I'll prove you wrong, right? And the reason I'm saying all this, I promise I'm going to come back full court, but the reason I'm saying all this is because you asked about kind of where it all started. You know, this entrepreneurial, this drive, I think, has come from constantly just like pushing myself to get something accomplished, even though it doesn't seem like it was, you know, it was even possible to get it done. And so I dropped out of high school, believe it or not. I actually missed so many school days selling Kirby's and getting in trouble and hanging out with the wrong crowd that I got zeros when I missed. And so I didn't even graduate from high school. I got a GED, guys.
Wait, so you were selling Kirby's in high school? Because those are like the equivalent of like Rolls Royces of vacuums. That's pretty badass.
Yeah. Yeah, man. It was, I actually thought I was getting so good at selling Kirby's. I had the owner of the Kirby company, they actually call him Mr. Kirby, wrote me a letter. And it was, I was the youngest DPS in Oklahoma. So I was starting to make money off other people that I would bring out to sell when they were selling these Kirby's. And I thought that this was going to be this is all I need. I'm just going to sell Kirby's for the rest of my life. I mean, how naive, but this is what I thought. Right. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until that my manager of the Kirby, that I looked up to very well, he stopped. He went away and quit the business. And I started wondering, like, man, what am I going to do? I dropped out of high school, and I'm like, you know, he's kind of like one of the guys that I was like learning from, like kind of like a mentor in that way. And, I remember getting in front of a lady that was like 85 years old, and like showing her the whole Kirby and everything. Mm-hmm. And she loved it. And she was like cleaning the room and everything. And I was asking her, I was like, when's the last time you smiled cleaning the house? Like I was doing all these cool little funny, you know, sales things and building rapport. And she was loving it. At the very end, she didn't even flinch. She was like, I want it. You know, I absolutely have to have it. It was really, really heavy. And I remember a part of me going, I don't think she should buy this.
Mm.
Like I know it's easy. I could just sell it right now, but I don't feel good about having her spend this money on this. And I started asking myself, why am I feeling this way? Like, this is what I'm doing. And I realized I stopped believing in the product. Mm. I stopped believing in the product. And a part of that too is I started figuring out too how much it was cost to make some of those Kirby's. And
you're like, guys, oh, 50 bucks, 100 bucks, it's,
you know, a couple $100s.
Yeah.
And so at the end of the day, I stopped believing the product, and I actually stopped selling Kirby's just a few months after my manager, named Vince Gonzalez, he stopped. And I had a whole change of heart of what was going to happen. So believe it or not, I was in a Christian heavy metal band on the side.
I believe that because it's weird, but those were the kind of bands that I did not go to Christian churches or really churches as a kid, but those were the bands I went to see live in concert. They were like metal, heavy rock, Christian.
Right.
So they just right.
Like, not just like Striper, but like Mortification. Like, oh, yeah. I mean, I'm talking about 6 foot deep, like heavy bands, you know, and my favorite band, which was not Christian, was Pantera, and Sepultura and all these bands. But anyway, I was playing this in the Christian heavy metal band, and the guys in the band moved from my hometown to Oklahoma City, which is about 60 miles away. Mm-hmm. Again, remember, I've dropped out of high school now, and my mom's like, oh, what are you going to do? I'm not going to sell Kirby's anymore. So I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And so the guys are like, listen, we want you to move up to the city again, which I'm from a smaller town, Weatherford, Oklahoma. And then they want me to move up to Oklahoma City and live with them and join this band and see if we can, you know, do something big in this band. Mm-hmm. So I did. I moved up to Oklahoma City, didn't know a single person, moved in with a group of guys, and we started to just play anywhere and everywhere. Churches, just for food. I mean, literally, we would play and they would feed us. Mm. And that was like the pay. And then we started to get good, recording our album. And we had a radio station pick us up and they played our album. And they had more requests for our songs than any other band that they've ever had on the radio station, which was killer. Mm. The band was called Eternal Decision. And anyway, long story longer, I went on that band for almost 4.5 to 5 years. Dang. We toured all over the place. It was incredible, man. We sold over 20,000 albums, and we actually even have a video on YouTube that got mistaken for Metallica video. They thought it was a long lost Metallica video. It had over 500,000 views, which is crazy.
Dude.
Yeah, it's funny. But where I'm bringing all this from is that I realized in the Christian heavy metal band that we were doing well, we were having fun, but along the way, like, I still had these desires in me that wanted to have aspirations. Like, I wanted to make money, and I didn't really get involved with Christian heavy metal to make money. Like, mm-hmm. I wanted to be successful, and, you know, I felt successful in terms of spiritually, but I didn't really feel successful in terms of like what I was doing with my life. Mm-hmm. And so lo and behold, man, about this time, one of my friends sold his internet business, guys, for $7 million.
Nice.
$7 million. Now, it's one thing. Yeah, it was actually called Snowball, believe it or not. It was a professional wrestling company, a business back in the day. It was a website. And he was using GoTo. Remember GoTo for clicks that they have? It was a company back then. Instead of Google AdWords, it's called GoTo. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so he was doing a big business with them, and he sold his website for $7 million. I remember thinking, wow, like, that can actually happen. Now, you got to think about this. This was got to be in the 90s or end of 90s, maybe like the first of the,
right back in the day when no one knew what the heck was going on. Yeah. Here.
And so I was like, whoa, man, this is crazy. It's one thing of actually knowing somebody. I mean, it's one thing of hearing somebody that sold, you know, like a company. It's another thing of actually, you know, having lunch with the guy that just sold it.
Right.
And to this day, by the way, this guy is one of my mentors that I've known for years and years and years and years, and still one of this. I feel like I call him, you know, kind of like the Einstein of our time, or the he's one of the smartest guys I know. But he sold his business in his 20s for $7 million.
Jesus. So we fast forward to, like, I mean, that's amazing. So obviously you took all this knowledge. I mean, it's been a compounded thing since childhood. If we fast forward to when did real estate, because that is, it seems like that's more or less the focus of everything you're doing, kind of has for what, the last 20 years, 15, 10? I don't know what it is.
You just gonna keep on throwing out numbers until you get a response. Yeah,
man, well, seems like your story is almost ranged
on the timeline and pushing it even faster here is, after my buddy sold that company, right, I started to realize that what was possible on the internet. And I started to go and look at anything and everything on how I could make money on the internet. I was doing everything, guy. I was in Jewelway. When you could make money on watching videos from people just clicking a video and watching a little video back then on a codec that was not, it was so, DivX wasn't even back then, I think. It's just like I did everything I could to try to make money. I was a domain broker for a little bit. Everything. And I started over almost 40 different companies, actually really close to 40 different companies. And I stumbled upon one time, this guy selling Ginsu knives.
Oh yeah.
So the Ginsu knives, like, they can cut the can in half. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm getting there to real estate, I promise you, but you got to hear this story. That's kind of weird. So the Ginsu knife, we cut the can in half, right? So I started to look and see how his marketing, right? And I've always enjoyed marketing. A lot of people would say is my strength. And so I was looking at, like, his marketing. He was selling, like, these Ginsu knives for like $19.99 or $9.99 and then like $10 shipping. And I was thinking, man, I had a pack of those Ginsu knives at one time, and they weren't worth that. Like, it was maybe you know, $5 or something. So I knew I could buy them cheaper. So I found a distributor. I ended up buying a package, again, a package of Ginsu knives for like $2. And I ended up listing them on eBay. And I started out this thing called a Dutch auction. I don't know if they do it now, but it's called a Dutch auction, where basically you can list it for like whatever dollar amount you want, and you just put a quantity. So whenever it sells, it would just pop another one up. So if you had 100 and it sold one, it would have 98 and then 97. You wouldn't have to do anything. It was automated. Mm-hmm. So I remember putting it up there for like 1 cent and then $9.99 shipping. 1 cent and $9.99 shipping. Mm-hmm. And in like one day, I had over 100 sales. And then I moved that business to selling 10,000 Ginsu knives a month. I had a truck. I had a semi truck, guys. At the beginning, I was drop shipping. And then eventually, I found guys that were selling them on eBay, and they weren't doing a great job. And I asked them how much they were buying them for, and they were buying them for more than I was buying them for, because I was buying them for bulk. Mm-hmm. So I started having guys start buying Ginsu knives from me, and I had a truck that would come to my house and a huge semi truck fill my garage full of Ginsu knives. And start selling these things. I had people living at my house, guys, that were renting my chair, that were renting each one of my rooms out. I mean, it was the ultimate bachelor pad. I had a pinball game in my living room. I had like a Galaga game. I mean, it was the best thing ever. And I had people that were friends that were in the morning, they would go to FedEx. In the afternoon, they'd go to FedEx. And in the towards evening, they'd go to FedEx.
This seems and like so just like a cool reality show.
Yeah, it was... It was killer, right? But man, I'm telling you, that was a lot of inventory and a lot of chaos. And so I realized that I wanted to get in something bigger. And do you remember when plasma TVs came out?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Plasma TVs, when they first came out, they were $20,000 when they first came out.
Dear God.
Well, I remember thinking, man, you know, what is the margin in that? So lo and behold, I figured out a way that I could drop ship plasma TVs. There's a company called, I'll just give it to you now, it's called Electrograph and Cinelite. Electrograph and Cinelite. So those two companies I could go and be a reseller for. And then I started to sell plasma TVs. The first plasma TV I sold, the very first one I sold, I made over $4,000 profit on one plasma TV that I sold off eBay. After I sold that, I started thinking, how many Ginsu knives do I need to sell to make $4,000 profit? And it was a whole hell of a lot more than one. So I ended up getting out of the Ginsu knife business. My roommates that were living in my house, they started getting girlfriends and chaos. So I wanted them to move out. I had no privacy anyway. So I started to build this plasma TV business. And about the first 2 years, I did, you know, maybe a couple million dollars. I was really excited about that. That was awesome. And sales and a pretty good profit margin in the beginning. You know, of course, electronics dropped drastically over time, but pretty good profit margin. And then the next 2 years after I started getting involved with government auctions. And when I got involved with government auctions, see, our tax dollars, guys, they go and towards September, October, November, the government spends all of their budget, right, on just random stuff that goes into a warehouse. And if you've seen the Indiana Jones movie and all the stuff that's in a warehouse, that's our government dollars.
Oh, lovely.
So I got in with the government and they started buying plasma TVs and digital projectors. Lo and behold, I found a guy that was willing to buy my company out. Essentially, I had customers that were ordering. I had government contracts, and I sold my company. And when I did, I got involved with real estate. So that brings us to real estate. And when I got involved with real estate, I didn't know anything about it. I just knew that I wanted to be involved with it, Joe, because all of my clients that were ordering these plasma TVs, I would ask them a question. I would say, what made you successful, right? Because these were affluent people.
Oh, yeah.
What made you successful? And 95% of them, what do you think they said?
Real estate.
Real estate.
I'm guessing. Yeah, no, because that makes perfect sense. You made that one, well, obviously you asked them, but before that, you kind of teed us up, you know, real estate's coming. I'm like, that makes perfect sense. You're selling TVs to people who are affluent. What do they all have? How do we get
they
into that?
They all have real estate, man. Right. And I just knew that I wanted to be involved with real estate. I just knew it, you know? And so I did what I do, you know, when I want to learn anything, I just dove in. I mean, I have a high school diploma, you know, GD. I mean, I don't have a high school diploma, but GD. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know, you know, I didn't know if I had to get a license. I didn't know anything. So I just went on eBay and started typing in how to buy real estate. And lo and behold, Carlton Sheets and Ron LeGrand and all the greats that you've probably heard of over the years, they were there. I started ordering their course and I made a commitment. I made a commitment that, now think about this. I'm a musician. So when you get in the car, you want to listen to music, right? Sure. I got in the car and I said, for 1 year, I'm not going to listen to music. All I'm going to listen to for 1 year is real estate, personal development, and the Bible. I told myself I was just going to make my car a mobile university. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did. I ordered so many courses and I got to a place where I was ordering these courses. I would go through them. I'd write up the notes. I would resell them back on eBay, even often for more money because I give them the notes that I wrote. So I joke around at this, but I actually got all these courses. Most of them are almost free because I just kept reselling another course, another course, another course and buying it. And over a full year, I didn't listen to single music when I got in my car. All I listened to was real estate and the Bible and personal development. Mm. And I learned a ton. And so I got to a place where I felt comfortable that I can do this business. And I started to become a bird dog. Mm. So do you know what a bird dog is?
I know it's a term in real estate.
It is.
Don't know that. I
think you'd go out and like find the deals and then bring them back to the agents or the investors, right?
That's right. Yes. So I found deals, right? I would go and market and find ways to find deals in the beginning, man. I actually went to whole neighborhoods and just knocked on people's doors. I should not have done that, but I still learned from that process. But you're not supposed to do that now. So anybody listening, you don't have to go and just randomly knock on doors like I did back then. But
there should be a better way.
You find deals by like having high weeds, houses that look like they're boarded up, all kinds of ways that you can find deals. So I'd find these deals. I'd write down the address. I'd give them to the guy, and he would pay me a finder's fee if he ended up buying the deal.
Wow.
Well, you're making about $500 to $1,500 on those, so not bad money. But you know, I was wondering, like, what is he doing? He was turning around and wholesaling these properties. So are you familiar with what wholesaling or assigning the property is?
Again, heard the term
vaguely.
Vaguely, yeah. But let's get into this.
Right. So the hierarchy of, if you will, of real estate investing is bird dog. You come in and you basically locate deals and you give them to the guy that's going to actually either buy it or wholesale it. For me, I was giving it to the guy that was wholesaling it. He would take the deal and he would wholesale the contract to another guy, usually a cash buyer, that would end up giving him between $5,000 and $10,000 a deal. Mm-hmm. So he was paying me $500 to $1,500, right? He was turning around making $5,000 to $10,000. Mm-hmm. I was like, man, I got to figure out a way to make $5,000 or $10,000. So that's what I did. I figured out what he was doing. And lo and behold, he wasn't even putting dollars into it. The only money that he was paying me was whenever he got paid. I thought, wow, this is incredible. You don't even have to have money to sell your own, to sell a contract. Mm-hmm. So essentially, he was just paying me from when he got paid. So I did this for a while. I was making $5,000 or $10,000, and now I'm excited about it. But then I was thinking, what are these wholesalers doing? How, if they're willing to pay $5,000 or $10,000 more, what are they doing? They're rehabbing the property. And I'm sure you've heard of this fix and flip. You've heard of that term, right?
Yep.
So fix and flip is where a buyer comes in, a fix and flipper or a landlord. They buy that property from the wholesale and then they fix it up and they put it retail on what's called the multi-listing service, or they retail out, they sell it owner occupied or owner finance, excuse me. Mm-hmm. And this is great in your mind. It seems like it, because these rehabbers, how much money do you think they were making?
Oh man, it's more. I definitely know that. Well, it's higher value.
I know what you see on like the, you know, HGTV kind of stuff, right? Like, you know, anywhere from like $20,000 all the way up to like, sometimes you'll see big flips where they make like $100,000 off them.
Right.
Right. Yeah. And those shows just, they don't even tell you about the holding costs. They don't tell you about all the fees.
Oh yes.
But so, yeah. So what I thought, the same thing. I thought these rehabbers making $15,000, $30,000. Like, they're making more money. So I need to become a rehabber. So lo and behold, I put together a rehab crew. I call it skeleton rehab crew. Mm-hmm. The one thing I regret the most out of doing real estate is putting together my own rehab crew.
And why
I had it for just a little over a year and a half, and I hated every minute that I had it. I could not keep a general contractor sober on the weekends. I couldn't keep his subs from stealing, and neither could him, stealing stuff that I bought. I had to stop all the time and just rearrange my whole day, everything. I couldn't go anywhere because I wasn't sure if things were getting done on time. And then you got buyers that come in that want to buy this property, and they're, you know, they're bugging you because they have to move out of their house and they've got kids. And I mean, it was a lot of pressure on me. So I realized very, very quickly what I did not want to do. The other thing about rehabbing for me, again, this is for me, because I didn't enjoy it. I probably
some people like that stuff and they can
hate it. They do like it, man. You're right. They love it. But I didn't approach it the way I probably should have, but even from the way I did approach it, how much money do you think I was making after I fixed up the property and quote fix and flipped it?
I mean, my gut's saying you would make less than you were wholesaling, or maybe a little bit more.
Just a little more, not little. Much, not worth the brain damage, right?
Not worth it.
My $20,000 to $30,000 paydays ended up being closer to, you know, 13 to maybe 17,000 payday.
Okay, got it.
And 90 days of time and 60 days of time to go. And so it was just brain damage, man.
Right.
And so I realized very quickly that this is not what I wanted to do.
Real quick, on the wholesale thing, just out of curiosity for context, how long does that process typically take?
Wholesale, it's very quick. It's very, very quick. Right, usually we call it hot potato. So when you put a contract on a property, depending on which part of the country you're in and how hot the market is, I can tell you from like Oklahoma, you can have anywhere from 30 to 60 days to close on that transaction. So now you have 30 to 60 days to find you a new cash buyer. But I can tell you right now, we're averaging just around 3 weeks or so whenever we actually sell the property and get a cash buyer.
Got it. So with wholesaling, you could potentially be making $5,000 to $10,000 in 3 weeks versus fix and flips where you're making like maybe 13 grand over 3 months.
You got it.
Got it.
You got it.
Got it. Right. Okay.
And you know, we're doing, you know, 8 to 10 deals a month now, you know, on wholesaling. And so it starts to add up very, very, very quickly. But going back to the idea of this rehab and what I cannot stand to do, and to this day I still don't like it. I decided I want to get out of rehabbing. So I was like, all right, if I'm gonna get out of rehab, what am I gonna do? And lo and behold, I get a call one day from a little old lady, and she has a house she wants to sell. And she was calling me from a letter, and you know, I'm on the phone with her. And the first thing that you want to ask is kind of figure out that there's equity in the property. You're obviously you're familiar with equity, right?
Sure.
What the value of the property is versus what's owed on the property. Mm-hmm. And so my question is, you know, how much is the property worth, and what do you owe on it, right? Well, she gave me some number that was very close to the same or even over, meaning that, you know, she owed like 130. Five on it, and it's worth 130, something like that, geez. Right?
Yeah.
Just for this story's sake, and essentially she owed more on the house than it's worth. And I remember saying to her, "Well, you know, ma'am, I'm an investor. So at real estate, I'm not an agent. I'm a real estate investor. So I'm gonna actually come in and purchase the property and turn around and resell it to someone. And because of that, it's got to meet our crash buy criteria. And I can refer you to someone that you would sell the property for, but I have to have a discount, and usually the discount's pretty significant for me to come in and get it done." She said, "Oh, you don't understand. The bank said just to make an offer." And I remember thinking, "What do you mean the bank said?" I thought she was kind of crazy. And she said, "No, just come out and make an offer." I said, "Fine, I'll come out and make an offer." So I went out there, looked at the property. I made an offer. It was, I want to say it was somewhere in the 80s. I didn't think I'd ever hear from the lady again. The next day, guys, I get a call from the same lady.
Wow.
And I'm like, yeah. And she's like, "Hey, I've got the bank on the other end, and I'm going to three-way you in on your offer." And I thought, what in the world? I mean, of course they're going to tell me, you know, to pound dirt.
Yeah.
So I get on the phone, and the lady comes on the phone. She said, "Yeah, you know, I want to speak to Corey in loss mitigation." And I remember thinking for a second, like, you know how sometimes there's like this moment where everything stands still, and it's almost like the clouds part and the sun shines down and you have this glorious moment that you just figured out something that's like the secret to the universe.
Oh yeah.
That's what happened in that moment. And I said, this is Corey in Loss Mitigation. And she proceeded to tell me that she's in Loss Mitigation and that the offer wasn't going to be accepted, but if we could up it a little bit more, she could probably get it accepted. Now they don't even talk like that anymore. But back in the day, they were really free on what they were saying. I think just like IndyMac or some other loan company. So I said, well, let me think about it. In my mind, my heart was racing, right? Because here I am, you know, thinking I made my offer in the 80s. She's saying to maybe offer like 85. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I'm going to get this awesome house for like $85,000. And it just needs to be cleaned out. And this is a great area. And like my heart is beating because I know if I get this accepted, like I can just text somebody and they're going to tell me without even seeing that they're going to buy it.
Sure,
right.
Sure.
So I was thinking, oh my gosh, this is amazing. And lo and behold, I ended up selling that property and making over $30,000 profit, most money I ever made on a single transaction. And it didn't even have equity.
It was just the difference right there, the 80 to, yeah.
Guys, it opened the world. And so I asked myself two questions. One, I went to an attorney and I said, what do I need to do to have a legitimate loss mitigation department? You know what he said? A stroke of a pen. Stroke of a pen. You can have a loss mitigation department in your company. Okay, awesome. Second thing, how many more people are underwater in their mortgages? Now think about this. This was around the 2005, 2006 time. It was just hitting. The depression was just like, there. If you could fog up a mirror, you could get a loan. People were paying more for their houses.
Yep.
I mean, even in California, people were getting loans for like $1 million. Their house is worth 200, 300. Like it was crazy on what kind of deals they're getting, right? And I just remember thinking, no one is talking about this, and this is a treasure trove.
Yeah.
So I could go into a lot more detail, but I think that sets the stage on what happened. So I ended up focusing on this area. I turned away from everything else, and I put all my heart, soul, every bit of my focus into short sales. That's what this is called. It's called a short sale transaction. When the lender is willing to accept less than what's owed on the underlying debt. And at that time, there was nobody doing this, guys. Nobody was really teaching about it, anything. There's a guy named Jeff Collar that was just kind of coming out at the time, but no one else was really talking about it. Ron LeGrand did a little bit, not really talking about it.
Sure.
So I started focusing on this, and then I became the local OKC short sale guy. And then title companies wanted me to come in and start teaching a class for them. Well, that was awesome because then their agents that was working with the title company started bringing me their short sale deals. Then I created a loss mitigation company. And I had a senior loss mitigator that used to work for the banks. Now they work for me. And they were doing my short sale transactions. I had 50, 60 short sale deals in a month coming in the hopper at any given time. And I was just doing it. And I started to do these lunches and then a bigger kind of meeting hall at a Denny's and then a bigger one at Shoney's and then another little like conference center. And I started doing these little conferences on short sales. And people were coming to hear me talk about the process and what I was doing. And I was answering all of these forum posts online. There's a guy named Chris Daigle, which I don't know if you know Chris, but Chris had this, you can ask Chris, he had this thing called EasyHUD. I was answering thousands of posts on EasyHUD and Chris contacted me out of the blue and says, hey man, I want you to be a moderator on my forum. And I did. And then Chris said, man, we're getting so much traction on this. Have you ever thought about creating an information marketing course?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you mean like one of the guys that like I was buying on eBay? And he's like, yeah, you got to, I mean, if we do a webinar, I was like, what is a webinar? He's like, I mean, think about this. This is like, nobody was doing this stuff back in 2007, 2000. Right. And no one was really doing this, guys. So I was like, yeah, let's do it. So I created a course called Short Sale Fundamentals. And that course went on to sell over 2,500 copies between $1,000 and $1,500. I started to create a software that was called Short Sale Builder that we built up over 5,000 users and almost 3,500 of them were paying members at $97 a pop. And a lot of them in the beginning, you couldn't really do it for about the three months into it when we started launching it. Mm-hmm. We could actually get a $2,000 setup fee. You couldn't do it now, but you could get a $2,000 setup fee. So, I mean, a huge business built around short sales. And I started to put all my effort focused. I started to go to all these events out there and speak on stages. This is where I met, you know, Than Merrill before he was, you know, $100 million Than, if he's listening to it. Hey, Than, you know, I met Kent Clothier. I mean, before, you know, Kent had Find Private or Find Cash Buyers and everything else he's doing. You know, Sean Terry and I met, my business partner now, but he had a podcast called Flip to Freedom. I mean, all these different things. And then Chris Daigle brought me into something called a virtual investing seminar, which was involving internet and the real estate, like where the two were going to collide and be a very, very big thing.
Well, that's
what happened, man.
That's what interests us, because Matt and I, we've always, you know, our goals are not to be in information marketing for more than really just this year, maybe. but all that, the parlay to wealth, real estate, and leveraging our skills with internet marketing, and like our traffic course, for instance. There's folks right now, and they're using it specifically, like Markian, he's probably listening. Hey, Markian. he runs a real estate, basically a community for vets, people in the military and out, and basically teaches them how to become real estate investors. And he's using our course to essentially bring awareness to his thing, and also sell properties. And so that's where our heads are constantly at. Like, okay, like part of your escalation path, I guess we'll call it, is like, it's the deal finder. It's the lead flow, you know, to the wholesaler. And that is probably the easiest way in if you merge the two, online, you know, marketing, lead generation with real estate. Sounds like that's a good, pretty good matchup there. Would you agree?
It is, man. Yeah. And the information marketing game is great, because you meet a bunch of people, you build a platform, and you can use that for a lot of different things. That is an asset, as you know.
Yeah.
Build a big email list and all that. But the coaching aspect of it. So, you know, building the consulting division from that. Now, if you're going to charge, you know, $500 for, you know, your time or something, then you're going to get burned out probably very, very quickly. But if you're going to charge, you know, $2,500 for an hour, that's a lot different. Right. And so if you're going to go into the consulting thing, I think you should definitely charge a lot more than what you think you're worth, because of the value that you bring. You forget about all of the hours and the years of time it took to get you to where you are today, where you guys are today.
Yeah.
And I remember having a conversation with Lewis Howes about this, that charges $10,000 an hour now for an hour of his time.
Oh, yeah.
And I think he's even upping it to 15,000 now. And I remember thinking, wow, that's a lot of money for this time. But you gotta take in consideration all of what it's took you to get to where you are. You forget about that value that you bring. My last coaching student I'm working with, just recently did $70,000 in a month, and he hasn't done any kind of wholesale deals in several months before. Now he's doing 70 grand. In a month after working together. Wow. What's that worth? You know, a lot more than what, you know, essentially that they pay to work with you on. But the information marketing aspect of it is cool. But one thing that you want to think about is the actual investing, you know, actually owning real estate, guys, is something that will pay you forever.
Understand. Yeah, we didn't want to do information in this space at all. it's to leverage. Yeah, like to essentially invest, get into real estate. Yeah, we've talked about it for years, Matt and I.
Yeah, I mean, really, we actually almost consider, like, in the way you said it, sort of broke down how there was kind of stepping stones in real estate. So you started as the bird dog, then maybe moving to wholesale, and then, you know, and so on. We almost see information marketing in our business as one of our stepping stones. You know, teaching people what we've been learning. We actually make more money doing what we do than we make off of teaching it. But, you know, we see it, the training portion, as a stepping stone to sort of build up our bank accounts a little bit, so that we can then go and do more strategic investments in real estate and other companies and things like that.
Connections, like with this podcast and through our products as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So what I'd be interested to hear a little bit about from you is someone like us who, you know, we're making good money, but we want to start to set aside some of this money and use it towards real estate. What advice would you give? You know, what direction would you point people to? Would it be like short selling, or would it be maybe wholesaling, or We all know you can just buy and hold properties for the capital gains and rent out the properties and make, you know, cash flow on them as well. You know, what sort of path would you kind of steer somebody towards?
If I had to do it all over again, I'd learn about multifamily. And it's really not that much different, believe it or not, than single family, except it just has more zeros involved. And it also is, it can pay you. I mean, the tax benefits on multifamily, guys, is with forced appreciation and with these new opportunity zones that are coming up on with Trump in office and all these other opportunities, multifamily would be, I would just skip. You don't have to learn single family. Everybody says you don't have to learn single family. So I would just learn multifamily. I would start listening to a guy named Corey. He's my partner. Peterson. Gosh, I don't know why. Sorry, Corey, if you're listening, you're gonna be like, dude, it's Peterson. Corey Peterson and Shelley Peterson, the Big Kahuna, that's what they're called. He puts on these great mastermind events, and he really breaks down on how he hasn't put really any of his own money into these massive real estate transactions. And him and Shelley just a year or a little over a year ago cashed out and walked away with several millions of dollars, their own cash, from growing the asset.
Wow.
And essentially doesn't have to really work again if they don't want to. But now they parlayed that into creating a mastermind and serving and teaching other people that want to come in and learn. And then they will bring the deals to those people that want to learn and have them invest in them. And I'm telling you, it is fantastic to really understand multifamily. And you guys are smart. It would absolutely take you no time to just dig in and learn about multifamily. And if you made the commitment and you really said, I want to do this, I'm going to do this, and you made the commitment, I would start listening to a guy named Michael Blanc. He has a great podcast, amazing podcast, and listen to his stories and how he teaches how to evaluate these multifamily deals. I listen to a guy named Joe Fairless. I'm going to his event here around the end of February, called the Best Conference Ever. He is a guy now that has close to, I know Grant Cardone would get pissed off about it if you already heard this, because he'd probably be competitive with him, but he has, I think, getting close to $1 billion under management. And he's only been doing it for really serious within under 5 years. Under five years. And the guy's grown his management portfolio through his podcast and through making these great relationships with people. Because there's a couple of things you got to realize in the world of real estate that really gave me the aha moment. And people listening right now, this is a big deal if you really grasp what I'm getting ready to say. There's people that have a lot of money, but they don't have time. There's people that have a lot of time, but they don't have money. And what is interesting is that once you learn what we call specialized knowledge, right? You can now be a value add to the person that has more capital, but they don't have time. See, you could go and find the deal. You can underwrite the deal. You could bring it to them on a silver platter, and they could actually go to the bank. The bank will lend pretty much almost any bank in the United States on a decent asset, guys. If you find a $5 million apartment complex, a bank is going to lend 70% on that. Almost any bank is just going to give you $3.5 million. And it gets even better because it's a large loan, and it's usually like close to $1 million. It's called non-recourse, meaning that they can't go after you personally if something happens. They're not going to bankrupt you, because they'll just take the asset back. It's called non-recourse loan, right? Wow. So then if you got a bank on a $5 million deal and the bank gives you $3.5 million, what's left? $1.5 million. Okay, so let me ask you this. How hard is it, if that's a damn good deal, meaning that you learned how to underwrite that deal and maybe that deal is really worth about $7 million, right? How hard is it for you, if you know the deal is worth, you know, $6.5-7 million, and you can go and buy it, let's say for $5 million, how hard is it if your bank is going to lend you $3.5 million to go find a few people to raise the $1.5 million?
The answer is not hard at all.
Not hard at
that
all.
That sounds like...
You know why it's not hard at all? Because they don't have the time. And you do, right? And once you realize that, wow, all I got to do is learn the knowledge. Yeah, all you have to do is learn the knowledge. And you find the deal, you underwrite the deal. And I mean, it takes some time to learn that. But once you do it, then you start realizing, okay, wait a minute. If I'm going to take this $5 million deal down and the bank is going to bring $3.5 million to the table and I got to come up with $1.5 million and I've got, you know, Bob, Shelley and Corey going to bring $500,000 each. I can actually cut up the equity however I want. Now think about that for a second. You are in control of how much equity that you allow for that $1.5 million.
That's good.
Now, see how powerful that is? Good. Let's say you want to do a 60-40. Listen, you give away 60%, but you retain 40 and you didn't even have to come up with a dollar.
Nothing. Just connection and time, organizing.
Connection and time. Now, people are hearing this getting excited and other people have been doing it for a while. Like, yeah, Corey, there's some other details to it. There is some other details to it than that, but really, that is 90% of it. That's 90%. If you could just grasp that 90%, that is life-changing. I wish I would have known about multifamily whenever I was getting involved with short sales.
Love it.
I wish I would have taken the time to learn how to underwrite a deal because I believe it would have been incredible potential on picking up deals from the bank, even from the bank. You know how many deals I passed on if they were even over 30 units? Oh my God, 30. I'm not even touching it. I wouldn't even look at it, right? Because I didn't know how to evaluate. I didn't know who I was going to sell it to, right? Oh my gosh. If you could learn how to underwrite deals, and again, you know, I gave you some really great resources there.
Oh yeah.
This would change the game.
You're saying that we have a chance. We'll follow in your footsteps. You know, you passed on it when you were younger.
Have a chance. I get a little excited about this. You can hear it, guys, but it's a very powerful concept that really has radically. I mean, right now I have 422 doors that I manage and own. I have management and ownership on.
That's apartments, right? Is that what that means?
Yeah, those are apartments. Units. Yeah, okay. Those are apartments, right? Uh-huh. And I can tell you, man, that. It was a lot different than what I thought to get there.
Got it. Yeah. And there's probably so many other details and I definitely will explore more of those, but you said, hey, there's a platform. Like you said, they got started with their podcast and connections. And I'm almost like when we're ready, Matt, we could just put it out there. Like, all right, got any deals for multi-units out there, listeners, right into our show. And
you know what's cool is that the information marketers that you guys connect to and the internet marketers that you guys connect to and everybody that follows you for traffic and everybody, you know, all the guys that are online and have big, you know, big businesses and they got consulting businesses or they got, you know, all these big funnels and everything they're rocking with and making millions of dollars. And at the end of the day, many of them don't have any assets in terms of real estate, in terms of actual physical real estate,
right. Mm-hmm.
But they want to learn. They would love to learn. And here's another thing too. Once you learn about self-directed IRAs and qualified funds, it just gets better and better. Mm-hmm. You actually have people right now, there's over $1 trillion. You Google it. $1 trillion just setting out and it was called self-directed IRAs, just setting out there, right? You can actually, if you connect with the right people and they have money in their self-directed IRA, it's just sitting there. It's usually not making more than 4 to 5%, maybe 6%, just sitting there, right? You can actually use those funds and direct them into, for example, let's just use this $5 million we're talking about. Let's say that Mary wanted to put $500,000 of her self-directed IRA into the deal. She can do that. She can do that, right? And let's say that you're going to, instead of her making 6%, you agree to pay her 12%.
There's all this money just sitting out there, just waiting. And then you can just pair
just
up.
Just waiting, man. That's just sitting there not doing anything.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
And it's way more secure.
Damn it. This sounds exciting.
With the mutual funds and the freaking stock market and everything else, right? That's just, you know, up and down, up and down. I'm talking about when you learn how to underwrite deals and they have cash flow and you know that this is a solid deal and that you've got a management company that's been at it for 20 years and they're just rocking and rolling, they've got a track record that's just awesome, you get excited because you know all you got to do is find the deal and you got all the other pieces of it laid out for you.
Well, how does the current economy play into things, you know, because we've kind of been on this sort of up with real estate again, and you know, a lot of people are thinking it's starting to feel bubbly again. This all could crash right. soon. We even have friends that used to be in real estate that have recently gotten out saying, yeah, the climate's just getting too scary. I mean, what are your thoughts on like the sort of economics of it right now?
Right. Great question. So whenever you have a headache, sucks for you, but fantastic for Tylenol.
Huh? True.
So be Tylenol. In this economy, and as a real estate investor, you're not paying retail for these things. Yes, it's important to keep an eye on and interest rates, and yes, it's important to keep an eye on what's going on with the market and different places. If you're involved with a mastermind group, that helps as well too. But no one can really predict the future. But even if certain things start caving in and the market starts having a recession, what you have done is, because whenever you are acquiring in the acquisition phase, and because you know what you're doing with on the acquisition side, you have a lot of cushion that you're not really utilizing. In other words, mm-hmm. if you learn the right way, you can hedge your bet. In any kind of business, there's always a level of risk.
Sure.
Whether you spend money on Facebook ads and someone says, this is the exact way to do it, and you are not going to get hurt, and you will just, you know, it's 3-1, put a dollar in, you get three back. There's always a risk that you may only get $1.50 back, mm-hmm. or maybe $1.25, or maybe just a dollar, or maybe a little under a dollar. But the question is, how much hedge are you thinking about up front, right? Whenever I got involved with short sales, that was the time I made so much money. When everybody else was just getting crushed, I found a way to, I can buy properties for 40 to 60 cents on the dollar that had more owed on them than what they were worth, mm-hmm. right? Because the banks were willing to take a haircut because they needed to get it off their books.
Yep.
So the answer to that is you are positioning yourself in the beginning to be able to acquire these properties, not at retail. And because of that, you're building in room in case something happens, in case the market changes a little bit. So, I've been through a correction. I've been through that correction. So I've seen how that stuff goes. And I've seen people that got crushed and killed. But the one reason that a lot of them did is because they were on these ARM loans. They were mm-hmm. They put themselves in situations where they had to refinance out, or they're going to get crushed. Mm-hmm. You don't want to do that. Whenever you're putting these deals together, you can get in 10-year and 15-year money. Listen, if you're in 10-year and 15-year money on a $3.5 to $5 million loan, right? That gives you plenty of time, plenty of time to do a lot of things on the asset. So right. just making smart decisions on how you're positioning and not getting into situations where it's so risky and making those bad decisions, that's going to eliminate a lot of that stuff that you hear all the negative stigma about.
Yeah, no, that's really cool with the strategy. It's kind of built in just naturally that you're hedging your bets and you have this built-in kind of discount, this leverage that you have price-wise. Now, just really quick, we got to actually start wrapping up because we have another sure. another one coming up. So don't.
I enjoy talking with you guys, man.
I know. Well, this is. I seriously want to dig in further if it's another show or at least a call after this to like.
Awesome.
I mean, this whole thing just sounds fascinating, and it's the direction we're headed.
Yeah.
Matt, anything you want to on the table there? That we have like a list here that we're just like, what did we go through?
I'm looking at our whiteboard of ideas, and a lot of them I think might be like pretty too deep of rabbit holes, so we'll probably have to do a round two at some point.
I think so. So, well, all right, so what are you working on now that we want to, or that you would like others to check out and learn more from you?
I appreciate that. So I get a lot of folks now that ask me about, you know, it's wholesaling. And I just want you to know that I'm not just talking from theory here. I mean, I've got an actual real estate business. Last year, we did over 113 deals.
Wow.
I didn't spend much time in my real estate business. I got a great team. And I think that once you start to get outside of yourself and start building a good team, you can have some great leverage in your life. The wholesaling business can be a great lifestyle business, but it's a transactional business. And if you want to get into something that has long-term cash flow and build assets, you can will to your kids and things like that. I highly recommend you look into multifamily. So I've got two things that if you're interested. One, if you're interested in working as wholesaling together, there's a link that you can go to called Corey's Coaching, Corys Coaching, Corys Coaching.com. I asked you a couple of questions on there, and it lets me know very quickly if you're just a beginner, kind of intermediate, you've done a few deals, or you're an expert. Just very simple, three buckets, and we can have a conversation about it. And then also, if you're interested in multifamily, and maybe you just got some funds, that maybe we're having this conversation about self-directed IRA, and you're like, dude, I've got $300,000 just sitting there, and it's not doing anything. I would love to be making double digits on that, right? We got people that are getting paid right now, double digits every single quarter, just like clockwork. They get a check every single quarter, and they will do it for years and years and years. Mm. And if you're wanting, if you're interested in learning about multifamily and investing like that as an investor, and quote, being a passive investor, then you can go to investingcapitalgroup.com, investingcapitalgroup.com. And there's a thing on there called an investor, commercial investor profile. The reason that that's on that website is because we are regulated that we have to have a conversation and with you before you invest or even want to invest in any of these bigger transactions. So because of that, it's important that you fill out that form, but it's a very simple form. Cool. And then we can have a conversation.
That's really cool. Well, we will probably fill out the coaching form, most likely. that's super cool. Now, just to wrap it up, any book that you recommend or some kind of resource that you find yourself going to often and something you recommend others?
I do. Believe it or not, I know that not to go too deep into this, but you know, the Bible is absolutely an incredible book to give you great concepts. It gives you great perspective on things. Whether you believe in Jesus, you think he's just, you know, whatever. There's some great stories and great concepts that you can learn through the Bible. So if you haven't checked out the Bible, I mean, actually, it's a really fascinating book to read. Second one is Rich Dad, Poor Dad. That's a great book that Robert Kiyosaki basically teaches this concept between working for money or having money work for you. Revolutionized my thinking, and I think it will for you if you haven't read it before. I highly recommend you get it. I think you can get it for just pennies now on Amazon. And a third book is The E-Myth Revisited by Michael Gerber. Crazy story is I actually got a chance to speak to Michael Gerber on the phone and heard his voice, and it was such an amazing kind of starstruck moment for me. But Michael Gerber is a passionate guy. I highly recommend you get his Audible if you read his book called The E-Myth Revisited. It's a concept that basically you get to a place where you're good at doing something, but you get so involved in it that you can actually hate the thing that you love to do. Yep. And if you don't know how to change around your positioning and build a team, you will actually hate the very thing that you love to do right now. I know it sounds crazy. If you, in the book, there's a lady that makes pies and she gets to a place, I'm not going to spoil it for you, but it gets to a place where she can't stand the smell of pies anymore, even though all the people from all around used to come and eat her pies because they loved it. So a great, fascinating book to read there. And then my favorite book is As a Man Thinketh by James Allen. And this book just is a, man, I mean, it just warps my mind on how powerful that we have from intention. Mm-hmm. When we're intentional about something and we put our mind to doing it, it is, our mind is very, very powerful. And I highly recommend, you can actually get this on, if you just Google it or even go to YouTube, type in As a Man Thinketh by James Allen. Mm. You'll hear this amazing concepts of the way to think and how power behind intention and understanding positivity and how negative thoughts can actually be negative things and be cancerous to all kinds of things in your life, and you're gravitating towards those things and being a magnet towards negative stuff. So it's an awesome book.
Yeah, no, it's intention and perception can it does shape your reality. So yeah, that's a book that I have not read, but it has been recommended before on here.
Man, you got to read it. Got to read it. Make a commitment right now. You're gonna
I will. Definitely.
It.
All right, awesome. Damn it. I will.
All right, you're on the podcast.
Thanks for calling me out.
You got to hold it. You got to hold him to it. Accountability. Yeah.
Damn right. All right, man, Corey, this has been super cool and awesome. Yeah, we'll be doing probably a round two. I would almost put money on it here. All right,
I need to get you on my podcast too. We have a podcast, and
Man,
definitely check it out. Real Estate Profit Masters on iTunes. We get some of the most amazing investors around the country. They just like open up what they're really good at, and they talk about their favorite mobile apps and their favorite book and like what their why is and their like times they've had struggle. It's great. So I highly recommend check that out.
Awesome. Cool. Well, we'll link all that stuff up in the show notes so anybody listening knows where to find it. Go to evergreenprofits.com and you can search for Corey, or it'll be probably one of the most recent episodes depending on where you're listening to this. And thanks so much, Corey. It's been awesome.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate you, man. All
right, man. Hey, thank you, thank you, thank you for listening to this podcast. Now, if you want to learn more and hear from us every single month, which a lot of people do, it's pretty fun. We actually write this thing called the Evergreen Profits Letter, and that is a printed newsletter that we actually send to hundreds of people every single month to your doorstep, so you actually get it in the mail. You can read this sucker. You can highlight it. You can dog ear. You can scratch some stuff out if you don't like that one. You say, no, Joe and Matt, that's not cool for me. But you can take a lot of different strategies, about 15 or so from every single issue, and it's really cool. So basically, these are actionable strategies that you can use in your business right away to test out and pretty much build on what you already have going on. So check it out. It's at www.egpletter.com. It's pretty amazing. And yeah, you should go check it out. See what it's all about.
Boom.